Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Shedeur Sanders is tough as nails. Incredible. He's the most important player in the country right this year so far.
Ross Gellinger.
It is more evidence that this day in college football, you need to have certainly a good, but if not a great quarterback in a good offensive line.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Like, that team should not be favored against Mississippi when they play in Tuscaloosa this next week. I don't know whether they should be ranked. If we're going just on what they've done this season, Alabama is bad.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Invesco QQQ Coach Prime. This guy is going to give us sleep disorders. That game ended late, as he likes to say things. When he really means it, he says twice. You ever heard that? It's one of it. I'm watching tons of Coach Prime now. Coach Prime content. He'll be like, who's cooking today? And you know what? Like, you get what he means. Anyway, the Rocky Mountain Showdown was a throwdown. Absolute bananas football game. Absolute college football at its finest. He walks out. He has Lil Wayne walk him out. The Rock is there. There's all sorts of celebrities. He's in a beef with Jay Norvell, who's not backing down. The old Chicago Bear linebacker. He's not taking anything. It is a dirty game. The Henry Blackburn late hit on Travis Henry was ridiculous. How do you not get thrown out for that play?
That was disgraceful. Disgraceful play. And I think all they did was look at it through the prism of targeting, and he didn't specifically target the head, but it was the cheapest shot of the year that I've
seen. Yeah, he went after his heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. That was terrible. Like, we will stop a game for like 10 minutes and try to analyze with some poor guy. Like, you know, did he mistakenly clip that chin? And it's like, this guy took two steps and buries him. Yeah. Travis Hunter could be out for a couple of weeks. That's not good. But the game was crazy. A million penalties. Lewis Brown of Colorado State makes a touchdown, does the Deion dance. Does a Deion dance, then holds up his watch like Shador. I mean, the trash talk for Colorado State. I mean, no offense to Jay Norvell, but he's like, there's always heat in this game. Like, really? No one paid any attention. Seemed like everyone
there has always been heat, I will say. It's little known heat. Nobody cared until now.
What, like,
so you put Deion Sanders in the middle of it?
We have a better craft brew scene in Fort Collins. I mean, what are they fighting over?
Fight over it. It's a classic, you know, Colorado versus the Aggie school. Colorado State was the Aggie school,
Anyway, ridiculous players. Torrey Horton, 16 catches for Colorado State, a touchdown.
Unbelievable.
And he throws a wide receiver option, a 30-yard dart for a touchdown. This Muhammad Kamara on Colorado State. Like, what is this team? Guy was a wrecker. Michael Harris.
Until he wrecked the game for Colorado State with a cheap shot.
Then he does the cheap shot, right? Michael Harrison, this unguardable tight end for Colorado. Shedeur Sanders is just ridiculous. So tough. A beating. The offense and defensive line is going to get Colorado at some point, I predict. But Not this week. I mean, I think 4 sacks. He got knocked out. He is tough. How about when Hunter gets hurt, it's Sanders who runs down and starts, like, ready to fight? Yeah. Like, how great is that? Your QB's ready to throw down.
Hey, and he went with his dad to the post-game handshake with Jay Norvell. I think he wanted to stick up for tops there, too. Like, Shedeur. That's a guy you want to be your teammate.
Yeah. Shiloh Sanders with the huge turnover. I mean, like, just so many great plays in this game. Colorado State's kicker is 31-year-old British guy with 3 kids and a wife. What is wrong with this sport?
What is right? Come on, Dan. What is right with this sport? Everything.
What in the world? They're like, oh, this guy's 31. He's in from Wrexham or something like that. Like, we got congressional hearings over transfer borders. We got 31-year-old British dudes kicking field goals. Goes home to a wife and kids after. He's like, come on, man. Hon, you're going to have to put the kids to bed tonight. We got a night game. Three kids. Literally everything. Jay Norvell coaches an unbelievable game, then gets wimpy at the end. Dude, go for it on fourth down. Don't punt it to Shador Sanders.
Yeah.
Sanders then goes Brady mode, he says. Leads a 98-yard touchdown drive with 2:06 left. Two-point conversion. Then botches the coin flip and chooses to take the ball. Gives Colorado a gift. Colorado then has a chance to go for two then. Doesn't. It just goes on and on. Incredible night. It's just what a absolute college football at its best. Circus, intense, crazy night. Dark, Ralphie, the blackout in the stands, the sunglasses there. Just fantastic. Pat, what is going on in Colorado? We've done this podcast a lot of years. We never talk about the state of Colorado. You guys are acting up.
I mean, it's the show. It's the best show in college football. The best show in several years, I would say, in college football. It nearly got derailed. Yeah.
Rock is there. Right. Come on.
60 Minutes has got a Deion Sanders story going tonight, I believe.
Another one. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's riveting. It very nearly got completely derailed last night. I still am not 100% sure how Colorado won. But, you know, you take all of the buildup from the first 2 weeks where they dramatically overperform, and then all of a sudden you make a program that was 1-11 last year a 24-point favorite against an arch rival from within the state that's had 2 weeks to get ready for you. Like, the trap was there, but we didn't notice because we're too busy watching Lil Wayne and The Rock and Game Day and Big Noon Kickoff. And there's Kyle Lowry, and there's Kawhi Leonard, and there's Chauncey Billups, and it's just like the show is so overwhelming that sometimes it obscures the football. And then they start playing football, and it's like, oh, Colorado's in trouble today.
Yeah, I guess it's a pregame speech video. The Rock is like standing behind Deion, and then Deion's mom is standing next to him, and it's just amazing. I think that, you know, he brought up the whole comment from Jay Norvell about, you know, my mom taught me to take off my hat and sunglasses when I talk to others or something. And so Deion, of course, brings The Rock and his mother into the circle for the pregame speech and hands the phone to his mom, who proceeds to drop a couple of go kick ass, boys. It's just, you can't make it up. Greatest show in the game, man.
Well, and I mean, they were beaten, I thought, on several occasions. Like, they, I thought when Travis Hunter, who you're losing two starters when Travis Hunter gets hurt. Mm-hmm. You're losing your best cover guy and certainly a top three receiver on the team. So that's a big, big injury. And they can't run. They can't protect Shador. They can't cover the crossing routes Colorado State was running. They're down 11 in the fourth quarter, and they still figured out a way to win it. And I disagree. I thought I liked Colorado State punting and putting them down on the two. I didn't like their defense after that, but they played this soft kind of prevent, and Shador just picked them apart going down the field. I said, greatest 98-yard drive by a football team from Colorado since John Elway, Cleveland Municipal Stadium.
So much joy. Then,
old man Bronco then, fan comes in, yeah.
Yeah, there he goes.
But you go to overtime, and the place where Jay Norvell screwed up there was to not go for two.
Yeah,
go for two. And either win or lose right there.
Yeah. Yeah. On the road in overtime, go for two. It's kind of the unwritten rule, and I thought they would, the game could have obviously turned out a lot different. Just take the game and boil it down to this one play. I don't know if he was asked about that in the post game, but I wonder how much, if any, that they thought about doing that.
Well, here's the thing: every one of those explanations is either I believe in my guys, or I believe in my guys. Like, it's the same answer. There was, well, I know what the stats are, but I believe in my defense. These are my guys. I'm always going to bet on my guy. It's the answer no matter what horrible decision someone makes. You just punt on second and four. I believe in my defense. So whatever. I mean, I don't know how good Colorado State is. We're going to find out how good Colorado is, and no disrespect. They are 3-0, and none of us thought they'd be 3-0. They have won three different ways. This is a very impressive comeback. For all the eye rolls, if there are a whole lot, everyone I know loves this, but I gather there is a sentiment that wants Deion to fail, or maybe there isn't. I don't even know. I don't see a lot of that, but
I picked up on that. It exists.
It exists. And I don't even, you know, why it exists is a whole different topic. But when you look at it as, well, you know, they got all these celebs and they're all about the sunglasses and they're going to fold. This team got tough at the end.
Yeah.
Shedeur Sanders is tough as nails. Incredible. He's the most important player in the country right this year so far. I don't know whether he's the best. Caleb Williams has been brilliant. Michael Penix, we'll talk about later. Just annihilates whatever the corpse of the Michigan State Spartans. But still, there's some great talent this year in college football. But Shedeur Sanders in all three games has just been incredible, incredible player and leader. And that team is flawed. They do not get a pass rush. That O-line is not great. There's some holes in that lineup, but they find a way to do it. And so it's a well-coached team. They weren't the undisciplined team yesterday. Hell, right. They weren't even the Tennessee Volunteers undisciplined. Right? They didn't fold when they got down. They didn't struggle to adjust. That was the Alabama Crimson Tide, right? They struggled to adjust. This is a well-coached, well-disciplined, hard-nosed football team with some really exciting pomp and circumstance around it. That's a pretty fun recipe. How big is this team for the sport? I just sat there last night. It's like 2 a.m. in the East Coast or whatever it was. Felt like 4. Yeah. And I'm just thinking,
I think 2:30 it ended.
I'm thinking that, like, you know, because you go out to LA, you're out in California or Vegas or whatever out on the West Coast, and like, you go to a bar in Atlanta and it's 10 o'clock at night and every TV's on college football on a Saturday night. You go to a bar in LA and it's not.
No, you got to ask for it.
You got to ask for it, right? And now I feel like that thing is on and everyone's watching. And this whole group of people that wouldn't normally watch college football are watching Colorado Buffaloes, Deion Sanders. It's great for the sport. It's great for Colorado University. It's great for Coach Prime and his family and all of that. Hiring Deion Sanders was the most, just an absolutely brilliant stroke by Rick George. It was an obvious one, but you know what? It's been obvious for a couple of years and the rest of them ignored it. This game against Oregon is going to be huge. 2 weeks. Imagine the celebs are going to be there in 2 weeks in Boulder when USC comes. Win or lose against Oregon.
I mean, yeah. You get Caleb Williams against Shedeur Sanders. Oh, come on.
I mean, we're going bigger than The Rock. What do we got? Like Taylor Swift, Obama. I mean, I don't even know who's coming.
Everybody's.
It's going to be like a Super Bowl. They'll be like, Beyonce's going to do the halftime show. Sorry, CU Buff band. Right? Who did the last? Rihanna. Well, she, you know, we're going to redo Rihanna's halftime. I don't even know what's.
Rihanna will ride Ralphie into the stadium.
Carrying her baby. I think she had the baby yet. I don't know. I hope so, right? She was pregnant at the Super Bowl, so hopefully. Congrats to Rihanna on the. I don't know. Anyway, I haven't seen Rihanna since the Super Bowl.
Congrats to Rihanna.
I know
nuts.
That.
This is nuts.
I know that Deion Fever is sweeping the nation when my 66-year-old retired high school coach of a father texts me last night at 2 a.m., which is way past his bedtime, and tells me to buy him the Deion Sanders sunglasses, that he wants some Deion Sanders sunglasses. Now I really know that it's serious, and the Deion Fever has swept everybody in the country.
I ain't hard to find.
That's right. Oh, people are finding them. That's incredible. For sure. I mean, right. Yeah.
Other games. We'll talk. Believe me, we'll talk more Prime. Tennessee, Florida. Stunner to me. Not so much that Florida could win, but how they won. Huge win for Billy Napier's program, who's trying to get some traction. Graham Mertz, pretty good. I thought he played a pretty good game. They had a huge second quarter, obviously. Trevor Etienne, 172 yards. He's as good as his brother, man.
Mm-hmm. Those ETNs are hard to tackle.
Those ETNs are hard. Is there any more? Are there any more ETNs? Find an anyone named ETN gets a scholarship offer if I'm a coach. I don't even know if you're related to them. I just want the ETN. This guy, that was fantastic. Swamp, absolutely rocking. It's just a big, because you could see the season slipping away from Napier and him being like, no, seriously, guys, I got a plan. This process is going to work. I'm a good football coach. Coach, you're 5-7, right? But they still got Georgia, who didn't exactly scare anyone. They've got Florida State and all that, but they had to get this one. They got Tennessee. Other side, Tennessee was sloppy. Penalties, blown timeouts, couldn't get anything going. Joe Milton, 20 of 34, 287, two touchdowns, but he's like inconsistent play to play. Like, you don't, it's like a pitcher with like too many pitches. Like, you don't know whether the curveball's coming or the fastball or a knuckleball. Like, it's just like he'll hit a 47 yard pass downfield, air travel on a dime, and then huck something out in the flats at someone's ankle. You just have no idea what's coming. Tough loss for Tennessee. Tough loss for the SEC, which has three unbeaten teams left: Georgia, Kentucky, and Missouri.
Five.
Ole Miss is too. Why did I see that?
Georgia, Kentucky, three? Missouri, Ole Miss, Auburn.
Auburn. I'm sorry. I don't know why I read that stat wrong. Anyway, five. But yeah, that they did not need that loss for Tennessee to a team that looks so bad losing to Utah. Anyway, Ross, thoughts on the game in the Swamp?
Well, it's, you know, establishing the ground, like we talked about ET, and they needed to do that, and that's something they couldn't do, you know, in the season opener. You know, Utah, he had 7 carries for 25 yards in that game. So they you know, him in the offensive line creating holes. Boy, when he got to the edge, I mean, it felt like it was over, and it was going to be 20 yards every time. Reminds you, obviously, of his brother. I visited his family there from South Louisiana, and when I was still living down there, I visited his family, and I remember him, you know, at the time he was like a sophomore in high school, and I was visiting his mom, and he came out of the back room, and this kid's like legs, all right, in trunk. And I just remember thinking, well, he's going to be like his brother. And 4 years later, here we are. It's impressive to watch. That was the key to the game. And like you said, it did feel, this one just felt huge for Billy Napier to keep everybody kind of on board that they're making progress.
Absolutely huge for Napier and for Florida. And golly, maybe we've undervalued Utah. Maybe if that's the lesson out of this, like, whoa, I mean, Utah absolutely handled Florida without its starting quarterback and without its star tight end. Maybe it's yet another feather in the cap of the Pac-12, but for Florida, yeah, I mean, that was needed. Billy Napier had not gotten any traction yet in terms of on the field, and Tennessee was the hot flavor, you know, after last year and a good start to this year. But yeah, Joe Milton, look, he kind of is who he is. We've seen him play for a long time now, and I think ESPN had the stat last night that kind of blew my mind, that he has thrown no touchdown passes in his college career on the move. Like, if he's not sitting still in a protected pocket, may not go too well. And they didn't let him get very comfortable, and he was throwing the ball all over. As Dan said, sometimes good, sometimes bad. That's kind of the story of who he's always been. So, yeah, the SEC as a whole, I mean, I don't know. We've reached that point of the season where it's like, I don't know who's good, if anybody's any good. There's probably, like, Washington, I think, is probably good. But from a Southeastern Conference standpoint, Alabama kind of stinks. Georgia, underwhelming. And then where does everybody else fall in around those two?
Yeah, I'm impressed with Ole Miss a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, BYU goes into Arkansas and gets down, then comes back, then wins that game. out-toughs them. That was a very impressive win by BYU. I was watching a bunch of that game. Every time I thought BYU was done, Arkansas is going to take this over, they came back. That's not impressive.
Unbelievable touchdown catch, by the way, that game. Chase Roberts made a one-handed grab in that game. In the game, what ultimately was the game-winning touchdown catch. It was incredible. And that dropped the SEC, by the way, to 5-7, I think, in non-conference Power Five games this year. It's the worst non-conference stretch, early season non-conference stretch that I can remember for the league, maybe a decade or more.
The SEC is not what it was. Just not what it was. And you can be like, oh, it's a down year. We haven't had a down year in 20 years. I don't know, 15 years. I don't know. We've talked, you can go back and listen to the other, we won't get into, is this the transfer portal or not? We'll keep talking about this. Is this the fact that, hey, all the schools can pay players now? Maybe there's something to that. I don't know. The most impressive victory of the league right now is Missouri beating Kansas State on Saturday. And that was a huge win for Eli Drinkwitz, who also needed kind of a signature. They got torched by K-State last year. Wildcats come in. I had predicted Wildcats to playoff. I guess they could still make it and they could still win the Big 12. But Harrison Mevis, or is it
Mevis?
Mevis, the thicker kicker. This guy.
Yes.
The thicker kicker. Now, he used to play at like 255. He slimmed down. But they named him the thicker kicker. He hit a 61-yarder as time expired. Brilliant. He claims he can hit him from 75. The thicker
kicker. That one would have been good from 70, it looked like.
Yeah, he claims. I don't know whether Eli will have I don't know what to give, let him take a 75 yarder, but hey, can you do it for the pod, Eli? Can you do it for the pod, coach? I think you listen. Maybe not. I don't want to give away our listeners. Maybe. Come on. We need content here. We're just trying to, it's trying to bob around here, make it. The thicker kicker also has a burger at the campus bar and grill in Columbia. Heard about this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The two-third pound patties, four strips of bacon, Colby Jack, an onion ring, lettuce, tomato, and a sweet chipotle sauce that he designed the burger himself. This is NIL at its finest.
Your fat kicker has a hamburger. It's great.
Take that, Tuberville. Put that in your bill. Who's the guy? No, I can't remember the other. Who's the guy from New Jersey? The senator? Senator, you played at Stanford. I forget.
Booker.
Take that. Put that in the bill. You're allowed to have, if you have a fat kicker, he's allowed to get a burger. Anyway, that's their best win right now in the annals of SEC non-conference seasons of lore. Remember that time we needed a 61-yard kick in Columbia, Missouri to beat K-State?
That's where we are.
SEC. All right, we'll be back right after this message. All right, let's get to Alabama and Georgia. Neither one looked super impressive. Let's start with Alabama. If you have five quarterbacks, you have none. That's the old adage, right? Jalen Milroe, not great against Texas, doesn't play a snap, totally benched. Tyler Buckner showed up and played all of his greatest hits from the 2022 Notre Dame season. I still have no idea why they took him as a transfer. Ty Simpson had to come in. This is all against South Florida. Ty Simpson, he has a very nice throwing motion, but whatever. Redshirt freshman, 5-9 for 73 yards. It's 10-3 in the final minute of the game for Alabama. Finally punches one in. Nick Saban after on the quarterbacks, classic Nick Saban. Whoever gives us the best opportunity to be successful as an offensive team, end quote, is the one who will play. Okay. That's good. Thanks for the insight. Okay. Tommy Reese as offensive coordinator. This was an unexpected and strange hire at the time, and that those words are now quite optimistic, I believe. Polite. What is going on with the Tide, Pat, and is there a solution here? Are they just doomed without a QB?
There may still be a solution, but it is not clear at this point. I mean, they... Like, this is, again, one of the reasons I've been saying Alabama is no longer Alabama is to completely mismanage a situation like this. Okay? Hiring Tommy Rees, a bit weird. Bringing in Tyler Buchner, what? Did anybody watch him play last year at Notre Dame? See, who is your quarterback? We don't know. You go straight up to the wire almost before they decide to go to Jalen Milroe. He's not very good, but then you make a panic move and bench him and start Tyler Buchner for the University of Alabama, the place that's had Tua and Mac Jones and Bryce Jalen Young Hurts. And Jalen Hurts. I mean, and then it looked exactly like you would expect a Tyler Buchner-led offense to look. And then they come back and put in Ty Simpson, who a lot of people like, but looked completely unprepared. I mean, didn't feel the pass rush. Slid on a 3rd and 5, he scrambled and slid 5 yards short of the sticks, gave himself up. Like, he's not ready to play football. And Jalen Milroe can't get in the game when you're playing those two. South Florida is not good. They played hard. They tried hard. They threw some disruptive stuff at Alabama, but come on. So this situation is not good. And I don't know if they can panic enough, I think, to make Jalen Milroe the third stringer after one loss. They could probably panic enough to fire Tommy Rees. And Nick Saban has 3 offensive analysts on his staff of 9,000 who have all been offensive coordinators, including Ken Wisenhunt in the NFL, Derek Dooley, who's been an OC at University of Missouri, John McNulty, who's an OC at, I think, Rutgers and Boston College. So who knows? But, like, that team should not be favored against Mississippi when they play in Tuscaloosa this next week.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they should be ranked. If we're going just on what they've done this season, Alabama is bad.
Mm. It's stunning. It was stunning to watch. Keep in mind, this is a South Florida team that that lost to Western Kentucky and allowed 41 points to Western Kentucky, and Alabama scored 17 and didn't and were kept out of the end zone, I think, until late in the third quarter. Really shocking to watch. And I think it is more evidence that this day in college football, you need to have a good quarterback and in a good offensive line. And those are two places where clearly Alabama is struggling. South Florida had 5 sacks in the game. A couple of those probably were on the quarterback, but 5 sacks in the game was the most sacks in, I think, 4 years by a South Florida team. It's just baffling what's going on there. And, I think entering the year, everybody kind of knew, including those at Alabama, right, that they had a quarterback issue. I mean, they were looking in the portal in the offseason. It was pretty obvious that they realized they didn't have a great quarterback. The really unexpected thing was them having issues all around as well. And that's just been shocking to watch.
Yes, Ole Miss Bama game Saturday among a million. Was there 7 ranked on ranked, at least at this moment? But yeah, you're right, Pat. I mean, this team hasn't looked good at all in terms of what they're doing. They're Alabama. I mean, Wyoming played Texas to the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Wyoming's got a better resume than Alabama.
Yes.
At least they beat Texas Tech. You know, it's a bad crew. Georgia, a lot of worry because South Carolina gave them a game for a while. But they pulled out late. I don't take too much from that. South Carolina's not that bad of a team. The Cock Commander went after I always say it wrong.
Uga.
Uga, right? Uga. What do I say? Uga. Uga.
Uga.
I need a dad of a Georgia guy. Uga. Wasn't scared. Cock Commander wasn't Phoenix. Scared. No, don't say that. Penn. Right, you got it right? Penn. Penix.
Penix.
Penix. All right.
I got it right.
Carson Beck got going in the second half. I don't know, but this does not look like steamroller Georgia. It looks like Georgia, which is fine. We'll see. It's hard these non-early seasons too. Like they haven't Michigan screwed around. Yeah, who knows, right? Some of these games, but
I mean, winning is really what it boils down to, especially in a conference game. I will say though, like right now the combination of Carson Beck and Mike Bobo has diminished the Georgia offensive passing game from what it used to be. And maybe that's just the way it needs to be. Maybe Carson Beck isn't ready to be Stetson Bennett and Mike Bobo isn't ready to call a game like Todd Monken. But everything checked down short, no vertical. And that offense has got a long ways to go to ramp up.
Yeah, you know, as long as you thought maybe as long as they don't make too many mistakes, the Georgia offense, like interceptions and turnovers, that their defense would be able to be fine. I mean, in the end, it was, and they ended up holding South Carolina just 2 touchdowns, got a couple turnovers. But who's the class of the SEC? I don't know. Maybe it's Ole Miss because they have probably played the tougher schedule and look the best in anybody.
They have defeated Tulane and they have beaten Georgia Tech. I mean, no question. I am fascinated to see. All right, backyard brawl happened.
Mm.
The resurrection of West Virginia, 17-6. Pitt wasn't looking too good. Hyped up game. Thought they did a good job coaching up this game. They went up physical run. They don't really have a quarterback. 166 yards between C.J. Donaldson and Jalen Anderson. They only threw they have backup QB Nico Marischal, and he only threw 9 passes, and they still won. But he did hit the go-ahead TD. We got numerous videos from listeners in West Virginia. really drunk, singing, waving beer. That beer, what is it? The Country Road Trust Lager.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, West Virginia. If our listeners showing us pictures of them drinking Country Roads NIL Lager is any indication of sales, the recruiting class for the Mountaineers is going to be impressive.
They're drinking their way back. Sometime during the summer, you got to pound that 30 rack on the hollers so they can get a linebacker.
Well, they came out of the hollers. They made it to Morgantown. Yeah. I hope they all rode the little train home, wherever, or at least closer to home or something, or had a driver. But Country Roads, take me home. Mm. Great, passionate game, though. Great, passionate game. Pat?
Yeah, I actually didn't watch very much of it because I was flipping around other stuff and writing an Alabama obit and things. But I did want to note the quote from West Virginia defensive back Beanie Bishop, who had 1 of 3 interceptions of Phil Jurkovec.
Great. Such a great name.
Yeah, Beanie Bishop. So that's great. About Jurkovec. We knew he wasn't too good at his job. That actually turned out to be true. Phil Jurkovec has gotten a lot of press over the years at 3 different schools, and I would not say he's been a savior at any of them.
But yeah,
this is a shocking statistic from a football game in 2023. Completed passes total between the two teams, 14. 14 completed passes.
Yeah.
Pitt was 8 of 20. West Virginia was 6 of 11. C.J. Donaldson, by the way, saw him live and in person at last year's brawl to begin the season in Pittsburgh, and he is just a stud. They are when he's gone, man. They're tough to stop. Hey, how about the Mountaineers? Remember what I told you guys, that nobody just walks up into whatever that stadium name is and wins.
Mylon Pusker Stadium.
Mylon Pusker Stadium, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, put some respect on Mylon and Pusker. I assume they're 2 different people. Fresno State needs to be ranked high.
Mm.
Fresno State
almost
is now
put them in the top 10.
Almost. That's close. They have road wins. They beat Purdue.
Yeah.
Also, someone sent me a thing that NBC was claiming that NBC. Where is NBC News? Who's the... Is it Lester Holt? Who runs NBC News? Is that the Lester Holt channel?
I think so. We need a fact checker.
I'm calling on Lester Holt to make this right. That drum is not the biggest drum. It just drives me crazy. Oh, How do you claim it? Anyway.
Here we go.
They beat Purdue. I know. It sets me off every time. Because the fans taunt me. They send me, look, NBC says it's the biggest drum. No respect on the South Koreans. They beat Eastern Washington in a tight one, mind you. Then they go to Arizona State, 29-0 over the Sun Devils. Mm-hmm. Beat them like a Purdue drum.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at this chart. You know, I hate the win percentage stuff because it's like, you know, it's a 99% chance. You see like three of those a week. By the middle of the second quarter, Fresno had a 98.9% chance to win the game, and it never went down. Mikey Keene, 281, two touchdowns. Arizona State is a mess. Kenny Dillingham's got a lot of work to build that program back. Of course, they you know, pull the rug out from underneath them, the administration and all that. But Fresno State absolutely crushing it in non-conference play. I mean, I don't care if Arizona State isn't very good. 29-0 at a Power 5 team? That's impressive.
Jeff Tedford is the most underappreciated coach in America. He is absolutely outstanding and year after year gets the most out of his team. And, yeah, there's only a few dark spots in the Pac-12, but Arizona State and Stanford are probably those.
Yeah, I don't know. I was so close to putting them like at number 10 in my top 10 because I don't think any other team has two Power 5 road victories at this point in the season that I could think of anyway. It's pretty impressive. I haven't seen their, you know, the rest of their schedule or how it looks, but gosh, I wonder if they could make some serious noise
State hasn't looked as good. UNLV got a victory over Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Another, yeah. I mean, again, I know it's Vanderbilt, but still SEC. They aren't playing. I mean, they got Kent State, Nevada.
Yeah, they're
going to
be favored in every game except maybe Wyoming. I mean,
Wyoming's always the tough. 72-20. And Boise
game,
State
probably
could be better. Who knows? Yeah. Yeah, they got a real chance, and you know, again, that's pretty good. They're certainly going to make a run at that bowl, and who knows what kind of chaos could break out. I don't know if they really would have. I mean, they got a long way to go, but so did TCU. Yeah. You know,
let's do a live pod from the Valley on like November 4th before they play Boise.
I'm in. We got a whole bunch of guys out there.
Yeah,
Fresno people represent. They represent.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good. The Iowa Brian Ferentz clock, the 325 points that Iowa needs. Huge day yesterday against Western Michigan. They screwed up my lock of the week. Scored 41 points, 41-10. They scored with 30 seconds left, which led to some, I don't know if it really was controversy or made up controversy. Were they running up the score? Was Kirk Ferentz running up the score on Western to try to save his son's job? I'm unmoved by this controversy. If you're on the field, why put third string guys on there and then tell them to take a knee?
Tell them not to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Let them play. Like tough break. We only got so many plays in a season. Max White scored a touchdown. You know what? He's probably never scoring another one for Iowa. Good for him. Cost me my lock of the week, but I didn't see a whole lot of that. A fairy. Now Iowa only needs to average 24 a game. He's ahead of schedule. They got 85 points. They should have 75 to be on pace. So you got all that. Do you care about this Iowa running up the score on Western Michigan controversy? Again, what a weird sport. What a weird sport. We got 31-year-old British dudes with a family of five kicking. And people are upset whether Max White got a little glory there.
Yeah,
at the end
right.
Of the game. Yeah.
So... No, I am not. I remember like when I was covering Kentucky 30 years ago and Bill Curry was the coach and they were not good. And people would ask him, you know, inevitably when Steve Spurrier would add three touchdowns in the fourth quarter to score 70 on them. And Curry would say, you know, it's our job is to stop them. That's it. It is a football game until the final gun. And then it's the other team's job to try to stop you from running it up. If they can't do it, go score. So no, I'm not moved by that. I there's some people thinking that poor Iowa's not getting enough attention for being a good football team. This is the situation Iowa created for itself. Deal with it. They've created a complete sideshow with the Nepo baby offensive coordinator. And so we're going to follow the Nepo Baby offensive coordinator statistics and see how he's doing there.
Well, they ahead put a clause in a contract.
You put the clause in the contract. You kind of you open the door. Gary Barta, the athletic director, former athletic director, I guess, now retired, opened the door for this to be the storyline. And as the season gets closer and closer to the end, it's going to be even louder and louder and louder as we get down to it. And if you look at Iowa's schedule and look at its past offensive performances, you know that this is going to be tight. this is going to be tight. Getting to 25 a game, they have to go to Penn State this next week, and Penn State defensively has played under Manny Diaz has played just about as well as any defense in the country. So they got a chance to put a dent, so to speak. Penn State does in him accomplishing this 25 per game.
The Iowa defense / special team so far has scored 10.6% of Brian Ferentz's points with a pick six and then a blocked punt safety this last game. So
they start his own collective. Fascinating scores in college football. Scores that can maybe only happen in college football. I suppose other college sports. Portland State opened their season losing 81-7 to Oregon.
Yes.
They then played at Wyoming and lost 31-17. So that's 74. They were then 88 point. They were negative 0-2 with a negative 88 scoring margin. They played their third game. They are now +3 in scoring.
What?
They beat North American University 91-0. They scored 13 touchdowns.
I have never heard of North American University.
Yeah, first off, it's a school in Texas. Okay. North American University used to be called Texas Gulf Institute, and then it just got chesty and decided they were gonna take over the whole continent.
Take the whole country. Yeah. Wow.
First you're like, we represent the Texas Gulf as our institute. Yeah. Call it Texas Gulf. That sounds like an oil rig, like 9-month program, yeah. Like how to cap an oil well. And then they just say, screw it. We're going to be North American University. The whole country. The whole continent, I mean. Does Canada know about this? Does Mexico know about this? What about the mummified aliens in Mexico? Do they know about this? They're being represented by this.
They know everything.
They have a whole continent, and they suck so bad they lost 91-0 to Portland State, which... Portland isn't even a state. There's no state. This is what are these names? These guys think they represent the continent. Portland State's calling themselves a state, and there's no state of Portland. Make it make sense, Pat.
Sorry, I was momentarily excited. I was trying to look up information on the North American State Stallions.
It's not North American State, North American University. Get it right.
I'm sorry, North American University Stallions. Yeah, and they're not very good. They're winless. And
91-0.
Yeah, that's to Portland State. That's not good. That's not good. So, congrats to Portland State for finding a cadaver like that to schedule. Getting yourself a W, rolling up some points.
North American.
A cadaver.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
And didn't Dan call Michigan State like a carcass earlier? Well, we were really on a roll.
We got corpse. We got a lot of dead corpse bodies.
Corpse.
That's right.
A lot of
dead bodies strewn across the pod.
Yeah, a lot of dead bodies here. It's time to move on to our most innovative plays of the weekend, courtesy of Invesco QQQ. Pat, which team was leading the way this Saturday?
That would be Kansas State, which still found a way to lose on a 61-yard field goal. We touched on that earlier. But in terms of innovative play, down on the goal line trying to punch the ball in against Missouri, they went to the Tim Tebow playbook, the jump pass. Will Howard, big quarterback, took the snap out of the shotgun, took 2-3 steps toward the line of scrimmage, and then pulled up and threw the jump pass over the top to tight end Ben Sennett, who was wide open behind the Missouri defense. Very clever play that if you've got a quarterback with a running threat, you can pull off, and they executed it perfectly. And then Ben Sennett took it to the next level by celebrating it with a pantomime shotgun beer celebration after scoring the touchdown. So that was your Invesco innovative play of the week.
Yeah, that is really it hit all topics, right? Good play call, great design, takes a little courage to make that play. Tremendous execution, slipping the block, faking the run, and then also an innovative touchdown celebration that's already been planned.
Hadn't seen that one before. Shotgun of beer.
Shotgun of beer. We've seen pretty much everything. Not bad. Obviously was not a real beer. Didn't like hide a beer in the, remember who's the guy that hid the beer in the,
Was it like Georgia Southern player or something?
Not a beer.
Shotgun a beer on top of a bus.
That was on the bus. I meant the NFL player who hit a phone in the,
hit the phone in the socks.
Joe Horn. Wasn't that Joe Horn?
Yeah, Joe Horn.
In the goalpost. Yep. Yeah, padding. Yep. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, it was the goalpost padding. That's right.
And then he got, they didn't like that. There's like props now laying around.
No fun league.
Yeah, no fun league. Anyway, that was pretty innovative. So there you have it. That's our innovative play of the weekend. Thanks again to Invesco QQQ. All right, what else stands out for you guys this weekend? You know, it's a million games, but then it's a million. There's not that many huge games, but what performances stood out to you? Ross?
Well, Malik Nabers from LSU receiver, just almost single-handedly won the game for the Tigers. I mean, it was a blowout, so they would have won the game anyway, I guess. But his line is incredible, and Mississippi State just could not cover Malik Nabers. 13 catches, 239 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jaden Daniels put the ball right on the money in a couple of long bombs for him. Made great catches, even though sometimes he was actually covered. Just an incredible performance, and overall, a great showing by LSU in Starkville. Yeah. Just blew the doors off, and that's kind of the LSU that I think entering the season we all thought we'd see.
Well, I certainly I thought Jaden Daniels. That's why I had Jaden Daniels to the Heisman. 30 of 34, completed 88.2% of his passes, 361 yards, 2 touchdowns. Then he rushes for 64 yards and 2 more touchdowns on the road against Mississippi State, that presumably had a good defense. I mean, this was LSU Mississippi State of old, right there. Yeah. We all thought Mississippi State was going to be good in this game, and they were not. So maybe this is LSU we were hoping for, or expecting. But maybe Florida State's that good, notwithstanding the BC performance. But I agree. It was pretty strong statement by LSU that this is going to be this. They ain't dead yet. Let me put it this way: they put a lot bigger statement than Alabama did coming back after a tough loss. Pat, what else stood out for you this weekend?
That's for sure. I'm going to hit across 3 things real quick. One, I like Washington was dazzling to me at Michigan State, and on the flip side of that, Michigan State is a wreck. All right, they landed themselves in massive turmoil, and it's clearly affecting them, and that was a dismal performance. But Washington, with that vertical passing game, I mean, they are fun to watch. Michael Penix has an arm. His receivers can get deep. They can win contested catches, and so they just go vertical, 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 and bomb you to death. 41-7, they beat Michigan State. It was 28-0, I believe, at halftime. No, actually, it was more than that.
Earlier,
35-0.
No,
the two first halves of Michigan State Washington last year, this year combined score Washington 64, Michigan State 8, and that's where the two programs have gone. Washington skyrocketing, Michigan State plummeting, and it was a pretty ugly scene in East Lansing there.
Welcome to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
All pretty good. All right. Most people pan out the Heisman at the end of the year. We like to do it every week. So this is our small sample Heisman segment. Pat, I'll start with you. Who won the Heisman in 1 week here?
Well, we've talked about Shedeur Sanders deservedly. We have talked about Michael Penix. We've talked about a lot of people who certainly deserve the praise that they've gotten. So I'm going to go a little bit outside the box and say Louisville receiver Jamari Thrash, who had spent his career at Georgia State well off the radar. And holy moly, has he been an impact transfer. Through three games, he's got four touchdowns, 329 receiving yards, and he strafed Indiana in the first half in Lucas Oil Stadium. He ended up with four catches for 159 yards and a TD. He's a deep threat. He breaks tackles and can turn small gains into big ones. And he got enough. He helped Louisville get enough points to hold on and win that game. And Louisville is 3-0 under Jeff Brohm, with Boston College next. Should be 4-0. If you can win at North Carolina State, guess what? Notre Dame at Louisville October 7th could be a big game. We'll see if we can get there.
So I think we had three group of fives beat power fives, I believe. Mm-hmm. This past Saturday, we had Fresno won at, who we discussed earlier, Arizona State. We had Ohio won at Iowa State. And we had South Alabama go into Oklahoma State in Stillwater and absolutely whip them. South Alabama's running back, LaDainian Webb, a junior college player out of Jones Junior College in Mississippi, actually led the nation last year, junior college-wise, rushing per game. He put up against Mike Gundy and company 151 yards, 18 carries, two touchdowns, and South Alabama 33-7 whipped Oklahoma State. Kane Womack, the coach at South Alabama, I think it's year three for him. Last year, you guys remember, they almost won a game at UCLA, won 10 games last season. They got it rolling down there, but my small sample goes to LaDainian Webb.
My small sample Heisman is going to go to Kyle Monona guy. I'm hoping I'm saying you're
Manon
right.
Guy.
Manon guy. I'm sorry.
Manon guy. That's okay.
Kyle Manon guy. Rutgers running back. 16 carries, 143, three touchdowns. The Scarlet Knights handle Virginia Tech 35-16. It's hard times for Virginia Tech, but still, that's a great win for Rutgers. They're 3-0. They get Michigan at Michigan this week. Jim Harbaugh's return might be a little bit more of a test than you were expecting, but this kid's got some speed. He can run inside. He can run outside. Overall balanced running attack. They're going to grind it. That game will take like was it 60 minutes on the clock? It'll take like an hour 14 to play. Now they're not stopping the clock. This is going to be running on running, and a lot of running. But good job by Rutgers so far this season to get something going. And again, we mentioned all the, like, do I really think he's going to win the Heisman? No. We try to spread around the love here. We try to spread around love. Which is why, let's get to say something nice. I mean, we've called multiple people dead on this program.
Yeah. Carcasses, corpses.
God. I think corpse is more polite than carcass. We've made fun of a school with ambition. We've done a lot of mean things. Can we do something nice? And so I will ask, Ross, could you say something nice about somebody in college football from this weekend?
I've got six schools I'm going to say something nice about. Duke, Wake Forest, Rutgers, Washington State, Oregon State, and Kansas. They all have something in common. 3-0. 3-0 for
a good basketball tournament.
Those schools, I know. I know it would be a great basketball.
That's like, yeah. It's our Maui Classic field this year. You'd be like, all right.
Yeah. And, man, I mean, of that group, you know, Duke and Kansas, the two probably, right, most prominent basketball schools, look pretty dang good. Like, good enough to compete for their conference title. And then Washington State and Oregon State, by the way, play this coming weekend. That'll be a showdown. The winner gets full control of the Pac-12.
The Pac-2.
Pac-2. Yeah.
That kind of overlaps what I was going to say for my say something nice, because we don't plan things.
That's a lot of nice. So, kind of grabbed half the, I mean, come on, Ross. Some scrum.
Well, I was going to say, you know, that, hey, we should be, you know, ESPN's going to be ramping up for that big Duke North Carolina football game. November 11th, when right now they're both 3-0. We know that, like, you know, Jay Billis and the basketball crew arrive like 5 days before they start playing in hoops. But anyhow, I'm going to switch gears a little bit and say something nice about Boston College and Colorado State, even though it's not really actually very nice, they played well enough to pull massive upsets Saturday. BC played well enough to beat Florida State. CSU played well enough to beat Colorado, except they couldn't stop committing penalties. 18 for 131 for BC. 17 for 182 for Colorado State. Clean up the penalties. You guys might be pretty good. You can salvage your seasons. They let huge games get away, but they actually did show they've got some talent on both those teams.
That's really nice. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant.
You guys,
it's about so as good kind. As I can get. Sorry. I don't
know. You weren't such an idiot. You'd be a good student.
That's right.
That's pretty much it, though. He's got a point. Those are blown. Those are blown opportunities. I'm going to say something nice about the MAC, the Mid-American Conference. MACtion. Incredible weekend for the MAC because they won. Actually, they won like four games. But Ohio defeats Iowa State 10-7. And I couldn't remember where all the bars are in Athens. Now I do. I was reminded. Court Street. It must have been a huge party. Exciting, great victory. Iowa State comes. This is why Power Five teams don't play Group of Five teams on the road. They go down there, can't get anything going. Biggest day in Athens in a while. And Iowa takes Ohio and Iowa kind of, you know, it's not easy to say back and back. Part of this game was bizarre refereeing. Iowa State's Chase Contreras kicked a 37-yard field goal that by the television video went through the uprights, but it was ruled not good. Absolutely no idea. So maybe it shouldn't have been 10-7, but tough break. You don't step into Athens. You don't step into Athens without that type of stuff happening.
That's right.
This ain't back in Ames with your sweet little tap water. You're not going to get the calls down there. Meanwhile, cross state, Miami Redhawks, after losing the confusion bowl with Miami, Florida, and Brett Gabbert claiming they were the real Miami. I'll tell you what they are. They're the real owners of the Victory Bell. They beat Cincinnati, which has been playing really well. They beat Cincinnati 31-21 in OT. That couldn't be the score. I don't know, whatever. They won it 31-24 in overtime. I don't know, you won by 10 in overtime.
Oh, I forgot that one. That's a G5 over P5.
So yeah, there's another four. Yeah. Had not owned the Victory Bell since 2005. It's also their first overtime victory. Gabbert, who's the older brother, Blaine, is pretty well known in college football ranks. 237 yards, three touchdowns. So for the first time in almost two decades, this big old bell that almost no one outside of Miami or Cincinnati even knows exists goes back to Oxford, Ohio. And I'm sure they've been ringing it all weekend. So great victory there. So, Max, stand up, baby. MACtion, not just Tuesday night for the degenerate gamblers. Some real stuff going on there. Start your action. All right, that is our pod. We'll be back midweek and then late week again. Huge week. We don't have the rankings, but there's going to be an absolute ton of games coming out. We'll see how Travis Hunter is feeling. I think he is probably out for the Oregon game. But next week is an absolutely one of the best September weekends. Clemson, Florida State, Colorado, Oregon, Ohio State, Notre Dame. There's a whole bunch, right? What else we got?
There's plenty. Ole Miss, Alabama.
Ole Miss, Alabama. I mean, yeah. How about that?
That's the fourth
one that pops up. Like, yeah. Ole Miss, Alabama, right?
Yeah. Do not go apple picking.
Iowa, yes. Penn State, yeah. No farmers market.
Apple picking. No.
Get your farmers market out. Yeah, everyone was taught me. Oh, it was a great day. It was. That's why you go farmers market early. But by, you know, no one said the farmers market or the apple picking or finding the Cialis tubs up on the hill at 2 a.m. when Coach Prime's in action. Also, UCLA visits Utah and Oregon State's at Washington State and Iowa. Yep. There's so much happening next weekend. And so get ready, get focus, hydrate during the week, listen to the pod. We'll get you there. We will get you to Saturday. We will get you there and get you ready and get prepared. So please continue to subscribe, tune in, tell your friends. We appreciate each and every one of you guys listening every time. We will talk to you later.